Welcome to a brand new episode of the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman. This week we have something, I won't say completely different, but brand new. We have independent artist Jason Lennox on the show today to talk to us about conventions and being an independent artist and so forth. Happy to have him on. It was a wonderful conversation. And I know some of you out there were kind of expecting me to continue the series of Four State Comic Con retrospective. But don't worry, we'll get back to that eventually. But we got a lot of folks wanting to come on the show and talk about various things. And Jason was one of those people that requested to be on the show. And I'm happy that he was on the show. Or I should say is on the show. So, before we get into the Skype call that he was part of, I just want to let you all know that, again, this was a Skype call. I might sound a little bit funky, and the only editing I've done on this call was pretty much cut out the pre-show and the post-show, and kind of take out a lot of the sections that might have been dropped in the call, which there were very, very few, and I hope you enjoy the call, the interview, the discussion that we had. Between the two, and don't forget the links to find Jason Lennox art and what he's doing to request commissions and so forth and so on will be in the show description on our main page, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. Also, while you're there checking out all the great links in regards to finding Jason and our show stuff, feel free to download, go back into our catalog and download all the other great interviews and listen to the other great guests that we've had on the show in the past. So, especially during this time of quarantine and pandemic, therefore, listen to it at home. Listen to all we have to offer. Don't forget to listen to other independent podcasters because we're all kind of hurting right now. So, don't forget to give everybody a listen while you're doing chores, gardening, whatever at home, including exercising if you choose to do that. I know it's kind of hard to listen to podcasts while watching Netflix or reading, but still, it takes the place of the radio. And you're supporting local people, independent people. But still, back to the matter at hand. Here's our discussion / interview with Jason Lennox right now. All right, folks, as you guys and gals out there heard from the brief little intro, we have an independent artist with us today. Would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, sure. I'm Jason Lennox. I'm a self-publishing comic book artist and a freelance artist, and I make art. And when we weren't social distancing, I love to do comic conventions, and right now that's on pause. So I'm here today. In early April with a five-year-old in the room with me because we're all social distancing with no school and we're here to hang out with Long Coat Mafia and Godfather. So thank you for having me on, Godfather.
No, I'm happy to have you on. It's one of those things that as we were kind of talking about before the show in regards to conventions being canceled, both big and small, one of the things that was a little bit of a conundrum, I don't want to say happy conundrum because the show got canceled, but we, as a lot of our audience out there knows, I personally got a new job, and the hard thing is trying to get used to doing this with a new job and trying to get extra content for this, and cons are our biggest way to get extra content because we love to bring the con to our audience. And Four State would have been like 8 weeks of content close to, if not, depending on if stuff that, if I had other interviews and so forth and so on outside the con, it would have stretched out to probably 3 months, maybe more.
But sure.
The thing is, you being on the show is one of those happy things because due to the social distancing and this pandemic, as bad as it is, there's a little one.
Yes, we're talking about Ghostbusters Playmobil. Go ahead.
the thing is, with folks like you have been, in a way, contacting the show saying, hey, I want to be on a podcast and talk about X, Y, and Z. That's why we had the wonderful Genoviva Rossi on, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and we've had a roundtable conversation from the folks at home who are listening about COVID, and all these folks, including yourself, wanting to be on the show to talk about various things, including art and acting and so forth.
Yeah, and you know, I love this. I always keep my eye open for podcasts. I keep a little file of all the reviewers and podcasters. So, you know, one of these things you'll have to do for me is just shoot me your email, and I'm going to put you on my press list. Right? Like I'm so important. I have a press list, so I keep track of all the people that are kind enough to review me or allow me to be a guest in their show. And I always appreciate it because whether a podcast is, you know, new or old or big or small. I love to connect with the hosts, and I love to connect to the awesome fans that you have and your audience of you know, awesome fans and people, and hopefully they can check me out and I get to know more people. And especially now that we're cut off from our day to day, you know, going to shows, any effort that I can put in and anywhere I'm welcome to come on and just kind of talk about what I'm up to is doubly appreciated because we're cut off right now from our regular foot traffic. And, you know, you'd mentioned Four State. I was unable to do Four State. I really wanted to do that because those are the guys that do Harrisburg Comic Con, which I was at last year for their inaugural kickoff for that show. I usually do a show that in March called ZenkaiCon, which is a huge anime convention in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, in the city of Lancaster. So unfortunately, I was booked to do that in Four State. Four State was the same weekend, so I was not going to be at Four State, but I was going to be at ZenkaiCon, and ZenkaiCon also, unfortunately, was canceled. And that's another really, really super show in Pennsylvania that, you know, again, if you know, you're in that neck of the woods, ZenkaiCon's a really great show, but unfortunately that also had to be canceled due to public safety.
Yeah, one of the things I was reading, and maybe you could get, since you've done a lot of smaller shows like Four State and Zenka, and you mentioned the one prior to this us starting, the one in Morgantown.
Yep, that would be West Virginia PopCon, yep.
What I've been reading is that a lot of it's kind of started with E3, then announcing that this year's show is canceled and some of the other big shows might be canceled as well. If they remain canceled, well, we'll obviously have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the smaller ones will either, you'd have either more smaller ones pop up or more of the smaller ones succeed more? Because they don't want to go to a place with a lot of crowds, let's say San Diego or New York or Chicago. They're going to go to the smaller ones where there might be more, to use today's term, social distancing than a place where it's always jam-packed.
So that's a great question, and I'll answer it as best as I can. You know, right now, some really large shows have not canceled yet. And one of the things that you hear is that why aren't some of these big shows canceling right now? And I think one of the real issues that those shows face is contractual language. So if a big convention has, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Super Celebrity X, and they have a guarantee, you know, or a famous artist or something of that nature, where there's some pretty, you know, hefty financial obligations to bring, you know, an A-list type guy, like I'll just say like Frank Miller, right? If you cancel the show, you might be obligated to pay them, right? But if what's called, I believe, force majeure in contract writing, act of God, right? Like if a show is canceled because the government says you can't have it, then those promoters wouldn't be obligated to pay for it. So right now there's kind of a weird space of like, why aren't some of these shows canceling? Now I'm doing a show. It's on my schedule for the end of May called Pop, Rock, and Horror in Gettysburg. They did their first show last year. A lot of my friends said it was a really good time. I checked it out. Seems like a really cool event. I really like what they're doing. They have not canceled their show. And they put a really thoughtful press release out saying that, you know, right now, you know, we're keeping our eye on the news. We live in Pennsylvania, so Governor Wolf is the final say-so on what we do. And today, today, this morning, they actually shut down all the schools for the rest of the school year across the state. So as far as Pop, Rock, and Horror, they seem like very thoughtful, intelligent people. And in their statement, on their Facebook page, they said, you know, we're going to keep an eye on everything and we'll let you know. Are they going to have that show? Who knows? You know what I mean? So all these things I'm watching is to say, like, what's going to happen and what's not. And going back to your question, Godfather, I think it is. That's a great question, because even if we say all clear, go out, how safe is something in the field being in a really crowded event? And, you know, if you've been to things like New York Comic Con, it's like a sea of humanity, where I was at New York Comic Con once years ago just to observe and have my portfolio looked at by artists and publishers. And I remember I was in an aisle and I felt like I was in the ocean getting moved by like a human wave. Not violent, but just kind of like kind of being moved along, like if I was in a body of water. How comfortable are people going to be at that? And I would guess not real comfortable. So I think you bring up a great question. It's almost like a business case study to say, if we have shows over a certain size, like 30,000 people, C2E2, New York Comic Con, Emerald City, Dragon Con, right? The big heavy hitting show, San Diego. Will they suffer due to their size and crowding? And will smaller shows, and again, we'll throw out some of these ones I've been saying, like, Pop, Rock, and Horror, West Virginia Pop Con, Harrisburg Comic Con, Four State, ones that are kind of in our neck of the woods. And I'm in State College, you know, you're down in West Virginia, so I'm in the center of Pennsylvania. That's our kind of like local scene. And for the record, I love those smaller shows. I think they're a lot of fun. But will they get a boost? I think the first question is are they going to happen and when can they happen? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you could take any of these shows, like if Pop, Rock, and Horror happens, will the public even feel okay going? We don't know that. It's a community will make, everyone will make individual choices, because you may have someone that was all excited to go to see the event and they may be scared, you know? And that's an individual choice that they're, you know, you'll just have hundreds of people that may just decide to not go because they just feel petrified to go out in public, because we've now done a very effective job of scaring everyone. The people are scared.
You're right. It'll be an interesting economic and cultural case study. And from what I've heard, I'm sure you've been to Baltimore Comic Con. I've been to Baltimore Comic Con.
Yep.
I've had friends who've been to Baltimore, and you, as you said, you've been to New York Comic Con as well. Mm-hmm. Baltimore is not as bad as, from what I hear, New York is.
No. It's not.
It's still almost as big and as popular, but mm-hmm. I'm going to use Baltimore as a comparison, even though they're not really the same con, but location-wise. When you go to a place like Baltimore, Comic-Con in Baltimore, at their convention center, it's crowded, but it's not overly condensed.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I talked over everybody. My bad.
I've been to Otakon, and I've been to AwesomeCon. I've covered Otakon many years. I'll try to see if I could cover this year. I don't know. I'll have to see. But them being in D.C., in the section that they're at, they could have as much people as New York or Baltimore, but it seems it's all so spread out in the location. They could have 40,000-50,000 people at their location, and it looks like a local show. And it's like, well, where are all the people? But then again, they're all crowded in the halls. They're going to panels. This will be a great case study to see how attendance is at these larger shows and how it could either possibly affect the smaller shows that we love and enjoy and wish and recommend most people go to and support.
Sure. Well, and here's the thing. I've done Baltimore on Artist Alley since 2013, and you're right. Baltimore isn't as bad as New York as far as crowding, but it does have certain periods, you know, particularly Saturday, that you may have a 3 or 4 hour stretch of Saturday where that thing, it jams up. So, I mean, it does. New York is more of a nonstop blast, whereas Baltimore, it has surges. It's just not as it's not as big. It's not in the same, you know, weight class, I would call it. But yeah, and again, you know, the questions come back to one: what will the state of Maryland and the city of Baltimore say? And again, we don't know because, you know, we're not there yet. It's at the end of this, near the end of October, I think, this coming year. You know, and again, those guys from doing Baltimore, their staff and volunteers are first class people. Great communication, super well run. Whether you're a famous person or you're kind of an off the radar dude like myself, they treat everyone very well. So they know what they're doing. But again, will they be allowed to have a show? We don't know. And then the next question is, what does that show look like now if they have it? Will they limit the amount of people at the show? Are people going to get really upset if someone walks next to them? You know what I mean? Are people just not going to show up because they're afraid? Yeah. And again, they're just questions. You know, like, I don't know the answer to any of them, and no one does, but they're very realistic questions.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people, when Four State got canceled, there were a few people upset. I'm sure they understood why, but they were kind of upset because they vent at their local artists like yourself,
yep,
or their local creators in some way, and they earn a decent, I wouldn't say a decent income, but they earn extra money to help them through the year, and this obviously hurts them. And
no doubt.
As I've told most our listeners and all that, the reason why I've loved Baltimore in the past because of the camaraderie of the folks there, from the people who go, the vendors, the people who run it, and what they did for our show is that even though they denied us a press pass last year, they were still like, we want you to come, pay, you know, come, you know, get a ticket. We want to hear what you have to think. And they were very supportive of us in a way and saying, we still want you to come here. We still want you to review us and do your thing, as a way of saying, I just looked at it as a way of, okay, if we come back next year, we now have, that's what they wanted. They wanted us to have a baseline so they could say, hey, now we could give you a press pass. And that's why we griped about AwesomeCon. It's like, you're not Baltimore. You're about the same level as Baltimore, but you didn't kind of way invite us.
And with anything, it's all about earning your stripes. You know, how many years have you been on the air, and what's your following like? And they watch all those things. And you know, if you look at, you know, how the artists are all laid out, there's a pecking order. How many years have you been there? What's your level of fame and notoriety? And there's artists that I'm sure are paid to come because they're that big of a draw, and you have to respect that. Yeah. You know, if you're, and I was thinking George Perez is one of my favorite comic book artists, you know, and I think he's now retired from a lot of stuff. But, you know, for a guy like George Perez, you know, when he would come out to stuff, like, George draws a crowd because he's George Perez and he's great and he's awesome and everyone loves him. You know, and in a case like that, a show may have to provide him payment. They may have to provide him a hotel and a per diem and transit. So, you know, to have a guy of that caliber, they may pay him a good chunk of money to go. And you know what? That's totally fair because he's earned that and he does the draw. You know, and then there's people that just may get a free table. I still pay for my table, but they give me a nice place and they've let me have the same place every year for years. So I'm a little bit beyond like the new noobs, where I appreciate where they put me at a table, but I still have to pay for it. And you know what? I have no problem with that. I think it's very fair. Maybe one day I'll merit a free table. And if they do that for me, that'll be great. But
I didn't mind paying. It was how Baltimore's professional courtesy was and how they presented themselves. Hey, we're sorry we got to deny you the press pass, but we want you to come and do your thing. And they were welcoming. That's when I was like, hell yeah, I'm stoked to do this. I'll pay the, you know, $30 to go or whatever it was. You know, come on. I told my co-host, come on down. You probably, I don't know if you attended last year. We were.
I was there. I was in Artist Alley. Correct. Yep.
You probably saw us wander by, you know, and film everything for our show. I don't know if you were in any of the walkthroughs that we did through Artist Alley, but we tried to stop at some of the ones that were more drawing in a way. So, mm-hmm. meaning if they. We met one person who was a former Marine. He is the Marines. I'm sure you saw him in Artist Alley last year. He was like 7'2", built like a linebacker. And we had to stop and talk to him about his product because he just drew us in. And I'm not faulting you in any way. It was just that how we were trying to do things, get focus in on people that were drawing us in, whether through their artwork or them.
Lots to see there.
You know, barking their way in, you know, to get the people to their table to buy their merchandise and what their artwork. So if we missed you, I'm sorry if we got you some way, but.
Well, hopefully the next time we're all there and hopefully it's this year, we'll link up. And again, that's one of the reasons I love to do podcasts is to, you know, connect with the hosts themselves and to connect with the. You know, to connect with, and it goes both ways. I like to share my appearances on shows to expose, you know, podcasts to my fans, and maybe you get some new listeners out of that. So it's a two-way street, which is again why I appreciate being on. But yeah, we'll see. I think right now it's a very strange time. You know, and like I said, all these questions and your question about will small shows benefit from this? Like, who knows? You know what I was thinking about the other day, Godfather. You know who's going to make out really well from this? Drive-in movie theaters.
That's what a lot of people are thinking. It's like, let's make drive-in theaters a comeback. Because I think what major of the problem was they couldn't really afford the new equipment for today's movies. Uh-huh. Let's provide, you know, there should be a grant. Hey, if you're driving 30, you know, let's get you, you know, more. Here's a grant to get better equipment and get yourself in. And
you might see the actual... The production companies, your Warner Brothers and whatnot, you may see them help bridge the gap because, look, we all love movies, right? We all love our science fiction, our horror, and our superhero films. Let's be honest. There's another group that's going to take a beating over this is, will people be afraid to go to theaters? It's the same as I said at these comic conventions. Will people be afraid to go to, you know, again, fill in the blank, big show, small show? And, you know, in your question, will they be more afraid of a larger show than a smaller show? We have no idea. It's all speculation, but they're real questions. Will people be like, if you look at a film like Avengers, you know, when those big tentpole superhero films come out, the first weekend or two is jammed.
Right.
And that's a lot of money for those theaters. And again, will people be afraid now if there's a big blockbuster where, you know, it's going to be crowded? Like, we decided I don't want to go.
Okay. I don't want to move it, but it kind of relates to what we're talking about. With everybody kind of stuck inside and everything else, one of the things that seems to be kind of sort of unaffected or may not, in the long run, it might not be affected any as much. If not, it might actually gain more ground is that the whole aspect of crowdfunding comics or comics going through Indiegogo, Kickstarter, or GoFundMe with these aspects because people want to stay home. Here's the independent artists like yourself, and not so much with big artists that are doing it now, like Ethan Van Sciver, Billy Tucci, amongst others that are doing it like this. They're, I won't say they're raking it in, but they're showing or showcasing independent artists like yourself and independent creators to the fact that, hey, you have a direct market right here. Therefore, you mail it directly to somebody's home. There's complete social distancing right there, and you're making it straight to the consumer.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I've made comic books now since 2012. I've make them when I can, and I've self-published 3 art books and 7 comic books in the space of about 9 years. I'd do more if I could, but it's what I'm able to put out with some of my friends that we just make our own books, and it's funny you say that because. My last Kickstarter, Lords of the Cosmos 3, wrapped last fall. And The books just came into me from my printer, Ready Comics in Arizona, last week. So I did an inventory check, checked all the books in, looked them all over. And Ready Comics, quick plug, they did a great job. They're a super publisher for big and small publishing projects. And I sent a message out to my backers saying, hey guys, like the books are in, you know, the due date, you know, or my completion date was always set as June of this year, which is good. So I said, I've got all the books, I've got your t-shirts, I've got all your rewards. I have to do a bunch of sketch covers. I have to do 15 mm-hmm. sketch covers. And once that's done, then I'll pack all the books up and mail them. And I had a young lady write me a note, and she said, wow, I'm so excited that we know we'll be getting your book because Diamond has closed their doors and I can't get new comics at the comic store. And I laughed because obviously, you know, Diamond puts out a ton of books and big publishers put out a mountain of books every month. And I'm lucky to do one a year. But I thought, wow, like, you know, me as a guy that just has a couple boxes of books and I'll put them in envelopes and take them to the post office and mail them out, is now working when the direct comic store Diamond model is now, you know, for all intents and purposes, stopped. And yeah, so I mean, like, you wonder what will this help small crowdfunded books. You know, will it?
No, I'm not saying we shouldn't support our local shops because local.
No. We should always support our local shops for sure. But I'm just saying right now, like they're like stopped in their tracks. You know, right. Trying to find a way to get their books to their customers. And I guess Diamond is Diamond like on pause right now.
What I've been hearing, they. Depends on the source you look at, because there are some sources are saying that they're not even paying the big publishers. They're just maintaining their buildings and everything else. They're not taking anything in. They're not paying any of the big publishers. That means places like DC, Marvel, Image, their people aren't getting paid. And that's a sad thing to hear. Yet, granted, you also hear the under end of the stick in regards to when you kind of look at that drama aspect, you see some of the louder squeaky wheels, if you will, going, how dare Ethan and, you know, folks like him laugh evilly in regards to, because they're still able to create, they're still able to provide a service for their fans. And that's his deal, his drama that he deals with and his stuff he pushes out. So
and here's the thing, I go back to when I was a teenager buying comics, and I remember when Image Comics started in 92, and I remember that was the big thing with Todd McFarlane and Jim Lee, that they said they wanted to control their own stuff and go direct and separate their fame from the big publishing houses. And you know, it was Todd and Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee and oh my, the guy that made Shadowhawk, I can't think of his name. Wells Portacio, Dale Kuehn. And, you know, they were the superstar artists of that era. Eric Larson. And it is interesting. If you kind of look at that group of, publishers, I think they did a lot of good for people about, you know, ownership issues and rights issues and you know, am I an employee, you know, or am I am I an owner? Yeah. Right. And an owner, because you could be a creator and work for a big publisher, and if you create it, they own it. Right. You know, and that's been an issue.
The 90s were the era of the rock star comic artists, no matter who mm-hmm. they were.
Yeah.
And it was also the time that the industry was getting flooded, and it also kind of ruined, or it was bringing down the comic book market in a way. It wasn't until probably the early 2000s when things were starting to...
I think there was winners and losers. I think some people did really well in the 90s, and other people did really bad. I'm sorry. Am I on mute?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I think there was winners and losers. You know, some people, you know, clown on Rob Liefeld, but he made a tremendous amount of money in the 90s. So, you know, people
In a way,
clown.
I clown on Rob Liefeld myself in regards to the haters. And I'm like, yeah, you're new to the comic book industry. Congratulations. Here's your membership card and your membership card to the I Hate Rob Liefeld membership club. So,
and again, but he was tremendously successful. Now you could debate the merits or demerits of his art, but right. You know, he did very well. You know, and again, that's a whole another discussion. Right. We don't need to go down that, but yeah. So, I mean, I think all those guys did a lot for creators. Now it is interesting to me to kind of see where those guys have gone, where it's like, you know, Jim Lee is now the top dog at DC, you know, so he, you know, his journey was that he had Wildcats, and was, you know, very important at Image. And then he turned that into being the, you know, I guess the CEO of DC now, you know, and here's
either that or he's in charge of the Image, because in a way Image is right. still part of DC, and I right. think he's in charge of Image in a way, or that arm of DC.
Right. And I guess it's weird to me because I remember when Image was new, there was a real, you know, middle finger to DC and Marvel from those books. And I remember in particular Dave Sim did an issue of Spawn, I think it was like Spawn 11 or something like that, with Cerebus, the aardvark in Spawn. And I remember there was a splash page that had this cage with all these like well-known parts of like DC and Marvel characters, like, oh, they're prisoners, not like us, Spawn. And there was a very, you know, kind of punk rock view towards those big publishers. But it's interesting, I think, you know, that group of guys, the one that strikes me as the most comic book oriented is Eric Larson, because he wanted to make Savage Dragon. He's made about 8 million issues of it that he still draws and writes. So, I mean, he seems to me, of all those guys, all these years later from 92, he just wanted to make comic books and own them, you know. But anyway, bringing it back to now and small guys like me is, you know, I just like to make my comic books and get them out to my fans, and I'm grateful that I can do it. You know, I think for guys like me, I make books when I can. I try to be as positive and fun with my fans as I can be, and it's a group of people that just organically grows. And I'll be honest, I really enjoy all those people. And it's fun for me, and I hope it keeps growing. You know, I enjoy it for what it is. I have a full-time job in the heating and cooling industry, but I really enjoy making comic books. And, you know, if it's just something that I do when I can, that's cool. If it becomes bigger than that and my fan base grows exponentially, that's great too. But I would tell you, Godfather, I make comic books because I really just enjoy making books, and I enjoy having people tell me that they have fun reading them. So I guess at a certain degree, whether the world, you know, ebbs or flows, or all these, you know, big publishers are hurt or thrive, I just enjoy making books. So, you know, and I kind of feel like in many ways I just root for everyone to do well. Like I appreciate seeing, you know, my friends make books. I'm glad when comic books are popular, because to me, I guess the old phrase was a rising tide raises all ships. Yeah. So, you know, to me, if I hear that, like, you know, a huge, huge, huge book like Batman's doing really good for like the, you know, whatever their, you know, current theme or storyline is, awesome. I think that's great, because if more people are reading comic books, it's more people that, you know, could be my fans too. So I try to be as very positive towards the scene as I can, because to me it's like we're all, you know, we all win together. And you know, I don't want to, oh, you know, I don't want to see you know, Marvel do good. No, it's cool. I'm glad people read Spider-Man books. And for the record, I have tons and tons and tons of those kind of classic DC and Marvel books, and I love them. And I enjoy more independent books myself at this point, because I would tell you at some point there's only so much Spider-Man I can read. And then you kind of move on to other things, but I would never, like, I love reading those books, and I think my kids will eventually get into reading those things, because it's almost like a rite of passage. I just read enough of them, and I just kind of like, or read something
else.
I've
been there myself, and when I've had the aspect of many people's like, so you like comic books, do you still read stuff like Batman and Spider-Man? Sure. And so I'm like, yeah, occasionally, but I kind of grew out of that. I'm reading stuff like Walking Dead. I'm reading stuff like Why the Last Man.
Sure.
And Sandman and Transmet, you know.
Sure.
I've moved on up to something with more of an adult feel to it. And it's not just Spider-Man, Batman, and the Hulk. There's more to it. You have to search them out. And people are like, huh, what? But if you'll forgive the trope of the indie podcast like myself, how'd you get into what was your reasoning to get into comics? Just the fans or something you just wanted to do? And who was your influence in learning to draw? Was it someone like McFarlane or someone else?
The reason I wanted to make comic books was I think, like a lot of people, I just felt I had something that I wanted to get out, and I didn't see it in what I saw. So, you know, you kind of hit a point where it's like, well, why don't you go make your own thing? And, you know, I look back at some of the earlier things I made, and I don't think they're as good, but they were part of my journey, and I appreciate them for what they are, and people liked them when I made them. So, you know, it's like, if you're going to say, well, I don't see what I want, then I'd say, well, go make it yourself. You know what I mean? Like, comic books don't require a lot to make. If you have some paper or boards and some pens and pencils, you can go make comic books. And, you know, I mean, you can give the same basic tools to people that are at varying skill levels, and you might see some basic work and you might see some incredible work. So as to why, I just wanted to make things. And as far as like early influences, let me think for a minute. I think I saw a lot of things like in the early 80s as a kid, kind of like the old school John Buscema kind of influenced Marvel heroes were kind of a big influence in the old but never gets old book, How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way, which was a Stan Lee, John Buscema or Buscema art book, which I don't know if you've ever seen that book or not, but it's amazing.
It rings a few bells. I think I've seen it around.
It's been around forever, man. If you talk to guys that draw or make comics and you mention that book, a lot of them they'll just call it like the Bible. It's just a very well-written book by Stan Lee. Stan Lee breaks it all down. And John, you know, was kind of the house style artist for Marvel for like the 70s and 80s, early 80s, where he just lays down how to draw. And John is just an incredible draftsman. He's an incredible artist. And this book breaks down how to draw stuff. And they talk about how to make an exciting panel versus a bland panel and, you know, perspective and point of view. And I remember that book. I remember getting it as a kid. But I'll bring his name up because he just passed away. Unfortunately, you know, we're talking about these shows. Coronavirus took away one of my favorite artists, Juan Jimenez, who was a Spanish national that lived in Argentina. And I was introduced to his work in the March 1989 issue of Heavy Metal when I was 14 with his first French graphic novel that they translated English called Leo Roa. And Juan was one of my favorite artists. He could be a fine artist, but he was a comic book guy. And his comic books, Metabarons, Leo Roa, Matter of Time, are some of the best hands-down comic books I've ever seen. And he passed away late in March in Spain because of the coronavirus. And
that's sad.
It was very sad, and it was very interesting to see the reaction from the comic book community. I picked up on it because I'm lucky enough to be friends with Dave Dorman on Facebook, and Dave posted it. Dave's a super awesome pro. He's done a lot of stuff with Star Wars, and he's like a fine artist. I mean, he's really talented, and he's just like, whoa, like this guy was like a guy I looked up to. And yeah, Juan was that good. And I remember seeing it as a teenager and just being blown away because his work was that good. And when he passed away the other week with the coronavirus, I mean, the outpouring of high-end comic book guys being like, this guy was the real deal. Like, he was a guy that was next level. So when you say, you know, where did I get from an inspiration? One, I mean, like, I discovered him at a young age, and I just remember just being blown away as a teenager seeing his stuff. I'm 45 now, and I'm still blown away by his work. It's that damn good.
I know. Speaking of those who pass, I believe, I don't know if you've seen it yet, we got word, at least on my end, we got word through, like, comicbook.com that Mort Ducker passed away at 91. They didn't release the causes, but... And he's been around since, I'm not sure your age, but, you know, I kind of grew up reading Mad Magazine. And
He was one of those. His artwork. Yeah. Yeah, no, Mad Magazine, I remember buying it constantly as a kid. I probably have two long boxes full of Mads. And the dudes that did work on Mad, I mean, were all knocked down, like, just amazing artists. And the one that I'll spotlight it for a second is Sergio Argonez. His jam was to make those little cartoons in the margins. And I remember one of my first comic books that was huge for me was his from the Epic imprint at Marvel, Gru. I picked up as a 7-year-old, I think, in 82. And I probably have the full Marvel run of Gru's and then a lot of reprints and back issues from Gru. It had been at several different publishers. And then after Marvel was at Dark Horse and some other places. But, yeah, no, it's terrible with Mort Drucker. I'm sorry to hear that. He was a super, super talented guy. And he was a fun guy for me as a kid. So
I wish I got a chance to meet Drucker. I wish I would have met him. You know, us old timers, if you want to call that, grew up with him, reading the books and seeing his artwork. I think as kids, a lot of the jokes went over our heads, but you know, we had fun reading Mad Magazine as kids. So it's nice.
Yeah, that's terrible to hear that. I mean, you know, he is 91. Like, I will say this, you know, people do, you know, obviously everyone does pass away. 91's a pretty damn ripe old age to live to. So I would say he at least got a full run at life, but nonetheless, it's still very sad because even though I don't know Mort Drucker, he gave me a lot of enjoyment as a child and as an adult. So that's sad to hear that. So hopefully, rest in peace, Mort. That's sad.
What kind of commission works do you tend to do? I know I did go into your website to see what you currently were doing, but what are you currently working on right now with? I know you're doing a series right now. What are you working on now?
Well, right now I'm working on a little charity piece for a animal shelter that a good friend of mine asked me to do a charity piece for. So one of the things that people love that I do is little satanic pets. So I'm doing a satanic portrait of a person's pet. So I'm doing their little dog is a Satan dog. So I'm doing that. And then after that, I will be doing some sketch covers for my comic book, Lords of the Cosmos, for my Kickstarter backers. And then I'm going to do a couple client commissions. And some of them are just, you know, just drawing some characters for some people is just kind of just general commissions. So
you do have a Kickstarter program going on right now?
No. My Kickstarter wrapped. I mentioned before it had wrapped in the fall, but it's just the act of getting all the rewards ready and the books just came into me last week.
It just sounded like you have another one in the works right now, so I was like, all right, you feel free to promote it. So
no. Right now, it's just working on all the rewards. Like with Kickstarter, there's always the excitement of we backed it, we're 100%, and then it's like. And now I have to do the slog of preparing stuff. So what I have to do for this Kickstarter that's complete is 15 of the backers are getting sketch covers. So I have to do 15 sketch covers for 15 different people, which it'll take some time. But, you know, and then some people have specific requests or some people just say, do whatever you think's neat. So I'll have to work on those for the next couple weeks. And then, like I said, I have some client commissions. Sometimes, you know, with clients, they'll ask me just to draw something. Sometimes people ask me to draw them, but they usually never want an exact portrait. They'll want things that are a little bit amped up or different, you know. So, yeah.
I know I've done that with a lot of artists, at least some of the big time. This is before my buddy dragged me kicking and screaming to Artist Alley. So, when I meet folks at home, when I mean my partner, I mean my co-host for the show, he kicked me, drugged me, kicking and screaming to Artist Alley, saying, we're doing Artist Alley this year. Come on. We're doing it. We got to do it. But the thing is, a lot of the things I used to do with the artists, big and small, that were in the mainstream industry is, all right, when they had time to do a sketch, what do you want? Anything you want. I don't care if it's... I know you've probably been doing 15 Spider-Man's sketches because you're known for Spider-Man, feel free to do something different. And sometimes it's worked and sometimes it's different. And they're like, I'm in the groove of doing X. Now you want me to do Y. And it's always with a grin on their face, like, you son of a bitch. You know, it's that sort of grin on their face. But they're happy to do it.
I've done some interesting commission work. I did some work in the last couple years for Virgil Abloh, and Virgil is the founder of Off-White. It's a fashion label. He reached out to me to license some art I'd done years ago for some clothes, and then I worked with him on his album cover. I had no idea who he was when he reached out to me, and I realized in the world of high-end urban fashion, he's huge. So I've done some commission work for him, which was neat. Last year, I had some artwork on a runway show in France, which was completely out of character for me, but it was pretty neat. Virgil's a super client, the super guy. I did some commission work for a client called Lady Vi. She's a lifestyle dominatrix in Seattle, Washington, and her husband had me do their portrait for their studio dungeon at their house, which was neat. That was more of a portrait where they wanted me to kind of build a fantastic landscape around them as people. Equally cool, equally fun to work with. I have a couple neat commissions going on just for private clients. There's, people. Just some things they want me to make for them, which I appreciate those like little freelance gigs to do for people. And again, just drawing some things they want. I do commissions. And like I said, I don't know if there's ever been anything I've been asked to draw that I won't do. But like I said, right now I'm drawing a dog for charity, and then I have to do a bunch of sketch covers. And then just after that, some small client commissions. And then, once my Kickstarter ships and wraps, that's completed, I will get my next Kickstarter ready to go this fall for the fourth issue of Lords of the Cosmos. So I'll start working on that probably in the summer to get that ready to go. But yeah, right now it's just, and when we do that, Godfather, I'll let you know when we'll do another appearance to promote that when it's going on. But like I said, right now, sure. I'm just in it's called the fulfillment phase. We're making sure that all the people get, get their t-shirts, get their prints, get their sketch covers, get their original art. So it's a process with Kickstarters. That was the one that just wrapped last year, was my 10th. So yeah, I've got a couple notches on my belt now from doing these Kickstarters. It's pretty cool.
Cool. Is there anything else you want? I'm kind of running out of things. We kind of covered it all, the wide spectrum. Is there anything else you want to talk about, or?
The only thing I'll say, and then I'll kind of plug myself for a minute, is just, I can't emphasize enough to everyone, man, just be safe, wash your hands, don't cheat, don't go visit your friends. Like, that's the biggest thing right now that concerns me, is that we're going to get complacent. Now I sound like a PSA, like a public service announcement, like, just stay home, and please wash your hands, and please stay safe, because, man, whether you're famous or whether you're not, man, I don't want to see anyone get killed over this stuff. And it breaks my heart to see people losing family members or, artists that I dig. So that's the big thing I would say to everyone, man, just be safe. You be safe too, Godfather. If you're on Twitter, if you're on Instagram, follow my feed. It's usually pretty fun. If I'm not posting my artwork, I'm usually posting stuff from the same couple movies that I'm always talking about, namely RoboCop, The Thing, and They Live, to name a couple.
Great movies.
So pretty much, and then of course under the point now, a lot of my fans, it's like, you were tagged in this post, and I'm like, oh, what is it? Oh, it's RoboCop, Thing, Aliens, Predator. You get the picture. So people know that I like a couple things. My Instagram and Twitter, they're pretty fun. I have a Facebook. It's Jason Lennox Illustrator on Facebook, for my art stuff on Facebook. If you're really feeling bored and curious, friend me on there, and you can see me post memes all the time. But yeah, that's pretty much it. And if you want to check out my art and buy some, you can go to Etsy and just check out Lennox Art Emporium, Lenox Art Emporium on Etsy. I ran a sale when we got locked down from going out. I did a pretty sweet sale on there. I'll probably do some others as we're locked down in April. I have t-shirts, comic books, prints on there. But yeah, check out my store. Follow me on the socials. Check it out.
I saw at least briefly on your page that you had a website as well.
Yep, jasonlenox.com. Heck, sometimes I forget about it these days because it's all about social media. But yeah, my website as well, jasonlenox.com, which is kind of like a gigantic archive at this point. And I'm always updating.
Let me just say it here. Send me, your handles on Twitter, if you got an Instagram there as well. And I'll link them all up when I post the episode.
Yep, and your marching orders for me are Godfather. When you post the episode, send me so I can share it with everybody. Because, like I said, I'm always appreciative to find a new outlet to talk to people. And I always like to do you a solid and make sure that I promote it to the people that like me, so I can introduce them to the show. And, you know, if anything, my wife always wants to hear me talk more, so I, you know, let her know.
You'll get all the links, yeah. And if anything, I'll let you look over how it's posted up. And if you need to, yeah, to make the changes, I'll make the changes. And you always get, when I do an interview with someone like yourself, you get not just the direct link, you get all the links to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the rest. Awesome. So.
Well, and I'll quote one of my favorite comedians, Bill Hicks. If my interview wasn't good, we'll have to substitute someone interesting in post, right? Put someone cool in, so, right? And with some laughter and applause and a happy audience. So.
No problem. Yeah. And we can end it right. Welcome back, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that conversation/interview with Jason Lennox. Again, all his links to find his stuff, to get commissions, and so forth and so on, will be in the description down below on our main website. Once again, that it is Longcoat, the Longcoat Mafia Pod. Rented lips, folks. Our main website is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And if you wish to comment on this episode or include convention stories or what have you, or you could always send us an email at longcoatmafia@gmail.com, or you could put a comment on the pinned post on Facebook. Our Facebook page, as always, is facebook.com/thelongcoatmafiapodcast. And speaking of our Facebook page, if any of you who just liked our page on Facebook and you're listening to this episode today, thank you for hitting that like button and following us on Facebook, and thank you for listening. Now, also, if this by some strange fluke, normally our episodes should be going up to YouTube, but they have not been. I know I have a few videos to go up on YouTube, at least one or two. I've been neglecting that with the new job. I've been tired and everything else. But hopefully within the next week or two, those videos will go up. But our YouTube channel, you can find in the show description, again, on our main website, is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. But if you're on YouTube, just search for the Longcoat Mafia Podcast, and our page comes up. But the thing is, our episodes normally get shared to YouTube, but YouTube and its infinite glory and wisdom, all sarcasm and piss and vinegar, if you will, they're not accepting the episodes anymore because of their new algorithms and all that, and they think we're for kids, and yet we're not. But still, the thing is, they should be shared there so you can listen there, but we do have a lot of content up there for all of you to listen to and enjoy. If this gets up onto YouTube, leave a comment down below and hit that like button. And while you're there, if you like our content and what you see in the past, don't forget to hit that subscribe button and hit that bell. Yes, I know it's a standard YouTube stuff, but still, must say it. But we also have other ways you can contact the show and follow the show. I got to be a little bit more active on some of these other areas, but one of which is Instagram. Our Instagram handle is Longcoat Mafia, and our Twitter handle is also Longcoat Mafia. So if you wish to follow us on those social platforms, you're more than willing to do so. If you wish to contact us about the show, what you heard, and everything else, you can always leave us a direct message. Be more than happy to read everything on the air. We have done so in the past. What else? We do have streaming pages as well, streaming channels for games. We did recently picked up the Final Fantasy VII Remake. We will be streaming that shortly. Just not sure which platform we'll be streaming that to. Probably YouTube. Do like a YouTube Live sort of thing in regards to that, because we haven't been streaming Borderlands 3 that much on any platform recently, but we should be doing that soon again. But since we have more time during the week to do that, links are, again, on our main page, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. But our Mixer channel is mixer.com/LCMP. And our Twitch channel is twitch.tv/longcoatmafiapod. Again, the links are in the description down below on our main page. Plus, like I said, you can find all the links there. Next week, stay tuned for our talk with Nick Hunt. He returns to our show after a very long hiatus to talk about horror movies and wrestling and more. But that's beside the point. Again, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. More to come, and not to mention our May 4th episode. That's right, we're going to have a Star Wars special on May 4th. We're going to handle that one a little bit different than most. We're going to give you a lot of Star Wars content that particular day, but stay tuned next week for, again, Nick Hunt's going to be on the show. And check out the links on our main page and everything else. What am I forgetting? A lot of our social media stuff is on our main page in reference to finding us. We do have tons and tons of videos on our YouTube page and our Facebook page. So please, if you get a chance to like and or subscribe to both, please do so, because at times when we get back into the swing of things after this pandemic, hopefully we'll put up content on both aspects, so you don't want to miss out. And don't forget to subscribe to us. That's what I was forgetting. How to find us. I almost forgot about that. I do apologize. If you're listening to us through our main page, which again is thelongcoatmafiapodcast.podbean.com, where you can find all of our content going back to our very first beta episodes, which you could download these episodes, listen to them on the player of your choice, whatever it might be, or stream them on the site if you choose that way. Or if you want to, you could download and listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, plus a couple others. But if you prefer a mobile device and listen to us on the go around your house in this case, or on your exercise equipment if you choose to do that, or what have you, lounging on your couch, or while you're working at home, you're more than welcome to do that. To find us on your mobile device, you can find us using Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify app, the Stitcher Radio app, plus the Podbean app. I do recommend you bookmarking our main page if you're listening to us on our desktop computer or laptop computer, or use getting the Podbean app just in case one of the major players like Apple Podcasts or Spotify tends to go wonky, which they tend to do. It's happened to me in the past several times that I couldn't download episodes that I was subscribed to on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for whatever stupid reason. But bookmarking their main page helped me get their episodes and stay caught up with them. So please do that. Again, if you want to visit our main page on your mobile device, you're going to need the Podbean app to get our episodes. Just want to let you know that. But we are available on all major players, including a few places where podcasts are found that I might not be aware of. I'm not sure what they are. If you want, let us know what player you're listening to us on by letting us know via email, which is, again, longcoatmafia@gmail.com. If you want to join in the conversation, again, our email is always longcoatmafia@gmail.com. And see you all next week when Nick Hunt returns to the episode in regards to talk about horror and wrestling and a heck of a lot more. So stay tuned, folks. Stay tuned. And see you next week.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.